This is an unscheduled bonus broadcast featuring call-ins from our listeners. And in this instance, I used the Blog Talk Radio live switchboard so we could get more calls on board. Blog Talk Radio switchboard has a history of being a little bit buggy, so you're going to hear some phasing and some audio drops and pops and glitches from time to time. It's not your system. It is something that is indigenous to the Blog Talk Radio live switchboard. Despite that, I hope you can hear past the audio challenges and enjoy the show. Thanks for listening.
Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
I don't know what I'm thinking. I have nothing prepared for the broadcast. It's an evening at home, alone, by myself. And I thought, well, why not get together with some friends? And so we're doing a You Pick the Topic show where you just bring to the table, to the switchboard, to the chat room, whatever is on your mind. I'm so excited about the opportunity to hit the road, to go out and travel again. I mean, you know, I'm good in small bursts, which is what most of the tour schedule for this year looks like. But I have been really, really excited about getting out to all these southern cities, you know, New Orleans. Never had a chance to do a speaking gig in New Orleans. How much fun is that going to be? And plus, you get to go down and have chicory and beignets. Oh, my God, it's good. It's delicious. Never done it. There's powdered sugar all over the restaurant. What's the name of that place where you get the beignets in New Orleans? You go in the restaurant, there's powdered sugar everywhere. All, it's under the tables. It's on the tables. It's on the walls. So I'm going to go to, you got Cafe, how do you say it? Cafe Dumont? Cafe Dumont. We're going to go there and have beignets and chicory. And then after that, it's Jackson, Mississippi. That one filled up so fast, they had to change venues with double the capacity. That blew my mind. Very exciting. Then after that, it's Memphis, Tennessee. I've never done a Memphis gig before, so looking forward to being in Tennessee. And then I'm going to pop over to Springfield, Missouri and Fort Smith, Arkansas. And the thinkingatheist.com/events has all the details. And I think some of those places would like an RSVP and just so we can gauge how many folks are coming. And it's therapeutic to get out and hang out with people. It's so much fun. You make friends. I have had correspondence from people who met other people at these events. It sounds like a Hallmark commercial, I swear, and it's true. I went out, we met each other at this tour stop or convention or event, and now we're pals. And we call and Skype each other all the time, and we become fast friends. That kind of stuff happens. And, you know, it's, I think, a natural byproduct of coming together in an event where you are with rationalists and atheists and secularists and humanists. And, you know, you don't have to sit on your hands. You don't have to worry about what other people are thinking. You don't have to worry about losing your job if you talk about the things that are most passionate or most important to you, rather. And, you know, people connect and friendships are made. Anyway, it's going to be it's too much fun. So I hope you get a chance to be a part of that. TheThinkingAtheist.com/events. Enough of me blathering on. Let's find out what our listeners have to say. I'll start with the first caller on the switchboard. Area code 256. You're on the Thinking Atheist radio podcast. Who's this?
Paige.
Paige, what's up? What's going on?
Not much. I'm calling from North Alabama. And been a long time follower of you. And one of the topics I've noticed you haven't gotten to touch on and kind of was hoping, you know, maybe someday you could, is autism or special needs and religion. Because being in North Alabama and one of the many buckles of the Bible Belt, there's many, many, many instances of their God's special gift and such phrases.
I've had people from time to time ask me to address those who have some sort of a special need or disability in relation to atheism. And I've always wondered how we'd approach that. Is it how the church frames those disabilities, how the church treats those who are navigating disability? You know, I've heard stories of people who have had one malady or disadvantage or whatever, and they're brought out in front of a church service and, you know, they're subjected to the healing prayer, and then they're made to feel that their faith wasn't strong enough whenever it didn't go right, whenever they didn't receive their healing. Hell, my father, who is deaf, was dragged in front of I don't know how many church services, and they named and claimed his healing. And at the end of the day, he had the same problem, except he just felt worse about it. Is that the kind of angle you would take, or something else?
Kind of something else. And really, I don't have as much of an issue with my son, who has moderate autism. Basically, he has difficulty speaking, but he's pretty much sociable. In fact, he's trying to show me his puppy, toy puppy right now. He doesn't really seem to care about it. Like, his mama, who is Church of Christ, tries to drag him and his little sister to church as often as possible, and she's all for it because she's neurotypical. And, you know, we've been trying to have discussions with her, but she's three, so there's only so many conversations you can have with her. But my son, anytime he goes, he's just kind of there because there's other kids there or whatever. So for me, with him, it's not so much as a worry. He doesn't really care. But there are other families throughout who they make sure they completely smother their children in the church.
Churches often will find someone with a need of any kind, and of course they want to conveniently be there to fill it, often in the name of ministry. I think often for sincerely good reasons. They really are trying to help. Many church people and church organizations are convinced that they are doing the right thing. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, some of the worst damage done is often done by the most sincere of people. I don't know. I'll make a note of it and kind of check around and see what the other listeners have to say, and maybe we'll tackle the subject down the way, okay?
Oh, that would be totally awesome. Thank you, Seth.
All right, take care. Area code 607. I'll try again here. You're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. Is this John?
It is. I don't know what happened.
All right, we tried earlier. We got cut off, and I happened to see you back on the switchboard. What's going on?
To sort of piggyback on what the last caller said, I think, would be absolutely fascinated on some sort of discussion on the relationship between religion and the targeting or the use of people with special needs. I think that would be a really interesting conversation.
It sounds like there's a lot of interest, so I'll make sure and we'll see if we can approach the subject. I want to make sure I approach it with people who know what they're talking about for sure. But I'll certainly put it in my podcast notes. Thank you, man.
And just one other question, completely and utterly sidebar question that has nothing to do with this. It's just something that I've been bashing around in my own head. Did you see Hacksaw Ridge?
I saw the film Hacksaw Ridge, the one directed by Mel Gibson, starring Andrew Garfield.
Yeah, I have been trying so hard. I saw it too, but I've been trying so hard to find like a credible atheist perspective on it that wasn't like some Reddit page or something like that. I'm curious, what was your takeaway from it? Did you think it was, you know, I certainly felt it wasn't as extremely religious as, you know, say Passion of the Christ, but you know, how did you feel walking away from it?
Well, I'm not going to give any spoilers here. I'm assuming those who were going to see it probably already have. It's based, I think, loosely based on a true story about a guy, a man of faith. I was a little bit reminded of, I don't know if you saw the old 1980 film Chariots of Fire, where there's an Olympian who... The Olympian, Eric Little, refuses to go and run the race that he's trained for his whole life, but he refuses to run on a Sunday. And so in the film, he is lauded. I mean, for the audience, he is sort of elevated to sainthood. You know, he's a man who's so true to his convictions that if they schedule the Olympic race on Sunday, he refuses to put his feet on the track. And of course, now I look at it and I'm like, you idiot. You know, it's you've trained your whole life to run this race, and it's Sunday, and Sunday's not even the Sabbath. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I mean, I just look at the film, and I think the whole plot just disintegrates. Well, the idea that Andrew Garfield's character refuses to carry a gun, I get that. But you know, there are so many larger questions about the army of righteousness and the innocent lives put into this meat grinder, and all of the idea that this one guy was sort of appointed by God as an angelic savior figure to rescue all these. But I'm not trying to discount the real soldier's heroism. I'm sure it was profound and amazing, but it's obvious that Hollywood is again capitalizing on a truly valiant person's story, and it was a human endeavor. You know, he might say that he was crying out to God or shouting to God and whatever. He very much has that right. But it's still the human being who was lifting the wounded and carrying them off to safety. It's still humans interacting with, killing, helping, saving, rescuing, giving medicine to human beings. You know, for entertainment value, it's, you know, I thought it was all right. Honestly, the biggest thing for me is I'm struck by how gifted Mel Gibson is as a storyteller and what a tragic story he is personally. And when he was doing the interviews to promote the film, and they would ask him about his trouble in the past and all the crazy stuff that he had done, his responses were deflective and defensive. And he had this, people have an enormous capacity to forgive. People would love if Mel said, I'm sorry I denied the Holocaust, and I'm sorry I was abusive to my partner. I'm sorry I said racist, and I'm sorry I was ugly in my heart. My life was in the toilet. I was alcoholic. I just was at rock bottom. I look at that man and I'd like to just shake him and wake him up and say, you need to be a better man. And I'm going to try to be that man for the rest of my life. I mean, people are aching for Mel Gibson to say this. And instead, he just kind of looked at the questioner like they were wasting his time. And so it's hard for me to support a guy like Mel Gibson. I was curious about the film and saw it. But, you know, I see his life as kind of a Greek tragedy unfolding in front of our lives. That's my two cents. No doubt. And it's more like probably $2. I kind of went off on a tangent there, but I saw the film. I'm going to move on to the next caller on the switchboard, John. It's great to hear your voice. All my best up there in New York. Hopefully you get a chance to shake your hand one of these days, okay?
Yep. And thank you, by the way, for the video that you made for my friends directed at me at your Dallas show that I unfortunately couldn't make. So I wanted to thank you on air for that one.
Oh, you bet. It was a pleasure to be able to do that greeting for you. Thanks, John. Take care.
Mm-hmm. All right. Take it easy. Thank you.
I love the movies, and I would love to see the redemption story play out in the live. I there are so few people in this world that you look at and you're like, you know, never, they'll never recover. They'll never put the pieces of their lives back together. I'm a romantic. I think, you know, what if Mel Gibson came to a point in his life when he looked around and he realized, I have just been the epitome of ugliness and I want to make it right. Here's a story. And I'll get to the next caller in just a second. So back when I was a video producer for a company here in town, we had a client, a pretty well-off client. And I'm not betraying any confidences. I'm going to speak only in generalities here. But, you know, we had a good relationship and produced some stuff for them. And I remember I had a phone call with this person like a year later, called the office. And this person was just... It was like he was different. He was ugly and he was shouting and he was combative. And the phone call ended. He hung up on me. It was bizarre how antagonistic his whole personality was. His whole attitude was just, it was foreign to the guy I'd known before. And, you know, the client goes away. Obviously, we didn't hear from this guy again. And I guess it was a couple of years after the fact, I got a correspondence, I got an email, and it was this, and we don't have a relationship. This guy, we knew each other in business, did a job for him, but I mean, we didn't talk, we didn't hang, we didn't really have each other's contact info beyond the office. And I got this email and it said, I want to apologize for the way I spoke to you and the way I treated you and the person that I was. Well, it turns out, unbeknownst to me, that this person was an alcoholic. And who knows what was going on in his life at the time? Who knows how ugly things were inside the walls of his house? I mean, we can only imagine. And so what I thought was just somebody who'd had a crappy day and was being rude. Well, this guy was, he was in the throes of alcoholism and his life was falling apart and he was miserable and he in many ways was not himself. And years later, he got into AA, right? We did a show on Alcoholics Anonymous and recovery programs. And for him, part of his recovery was to go back and make amends. And he had sent me this letter of apology and he was putting his life back together. He wanted to do the right thing and he wanted to create some healing to a relationship that had been damaged, even a business relationship. And of course, you know, I was like, oh, no, absolutely. Don't worry about it. It's all good. I hope things are great in your life. I mean, it's just people have, I think most people have that desire to see someone sincerely turn a corner and say, I'm going to reevaluate and try again. I'm going to try another chapter. I want life 2.0, right? I can do this, the right thing. People are hungry for that. And if people like Mel Gibson, who have just gone so far off the rails, but have so much to offer, especially, come forward and say, I blew it. I made a mistake. I screwed up. Please, you know, work with me. I'm not going to even ask you to take my word for it. I'm going to spend every day for the rest of my life revealing to you why and how I want to be a better person. I think people are desperate for that. And people really are eager for that. And if Mel Gibson would do it, I think people would rally to his side. You know, they have an enormous capacity to forgive, I think, most people. That's just my thing. Area code 412. You're on the Thinking Atheist radio podcast. Who's this?
Hi, Seth. It's Diana Clarion. I don't know.
Hey,
if you
Diana,
remember
what's going
me.
On?
Was,
in
your... Yeah, you do remember. I was an interviewee on your holiday show, the trans person who lost a family. I wanted to thank you on air for the work you did as far as going around with contacts. I got hooked up with a few people. I'm with CFI of Pittsburgh now, trying to get active there. I don't know if I had sent you an email or not. There was someone who called or contacted you concerning her daughter. She might be interested in talking to me. It turned out that I think it was Christmas evening. She sent me a Facebook note, and we started chatting. And I mentioned I just roasted a turkey. Care to come over? And she, I was just being funny. And she came back. Are you inviting me for dinner? I said, why not? She actually came over for dinner, and we had a wonderful dinner that night.
Good.
And
that's a story that warms my heart. I mean, talk about proof that community can happen through shows like this and coming together at, you know, at conferences or whatever. I mean, people can connect and I'm so glad you didn't have to spend the holiday alone. That just warms my heart. That's amazing.
That was absolutely fortuitous. It really was. It was totally unexpected and it was a wonderful thing. I mean, she was only able to be here for 3 or 4 hours or so, but we had a wonderful turkey dinner. She got to meet Sylvia. You may hear her in the background.
I do. I do hear Sylvia.
Yeah. Everybody was telling me that because the tip of her ear wasn't there, that she was TNR, trap, neuter, and release, because I took her in as a stray last year. No, she's not.
Well, congratulations.
She's looking for a boyfriend. I'm going to have to do something about that because she's driving me crazy.
The call but, of the night calls, Diana. You know, the night calls. What are you going to do?
And getting out into the public, it's even got me thinking of running for public office. Now, I don't know if I'm going to be able to pull this off or not, but I'm thinking about 2022. I've got to talk to a few people and see if a poor person like me can even afford to hold a seat in the United States Senate. But
if you put Sylvia on the commercial with you, I have a feeling you're going to double the vote right up. That's some charisma, right?
I don't know if you're familiar with Senator Patrick Toomey.
Vaguely, yeah, I don't follow
him. He made the news a couple times. He's very in line with the Republicans, loves Trump, the whole bit like this. I was livid when he was elected. And it's a dream, but if I could unseat him, that would be very, very nice.
Well, you know, and this someone in the chat room brought this up, Diana, that Aaron Raw is running for Texas State
yes.
Senate. So you might contact Aaron and see if he's got some tips or some, you know, he may have a leg up in this, some at least a primer to get you started.
I'm known by nobody at this point, so I've got to start getting around and make myself known. And even if I can't make a run for office, I'd like to do something. Change minds, be an activist, something like that. And maybe with contacts now, I might be able to do something. I'd love to.
Chris on the chat room said, Aaron and a group behind him has a group that provides funds for atheists who are running for seats. So that might be a,
really?
A starting point for you. Let's see if perhaps you can tap into that resource. And maybe Aaron's got some tips for you.
Hey, that would be wonderful. Oh, when are you coming to Pittsburgh?
I don't have Pittsburgh on my docket this year, but perhaps one day.
I'd love to see you. It's difficult for me to get around, so if people come close to me, it's a little easier that way.
But well, if they do another event in Harrisburg, then I'll try to get out that way. You know, the folks at the what's the name of that conference in Harrisburg?
I know the one you're talking about. I can't remember the name either.
Yeah.
I hope I'll have some. I'm going to blow my budget this year to see the solar eclipse. I'm going to Carbondale, Illinois. But hopefully I'm going to be able to get to Harrisburg one of these days.
All right, my friend. Well, I'm going to move on to the next call, but I appreciate you calling in. Thanks for being a part of the show, and I will see you soon, okay?
I certainly hope so. And you take care, Seth.
All right, take care. Thanks.
Okay.
Here's an area code from my hometown, area code 918. You're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. Who's this?
This is Tony. Can you hear me?
I can. Tony, what's going on?
Oh, not much. We're just sitting around eating dinner and listening to your podcast. My family's all here, Wendy and Austin and Braden.
Wonderful. Well, it's great to talk to all of you and talk with you. What's going on? What's on your mind?
Well, so we're right down the street from you in Fort Gibson. About 30 minutes away. Are you getting? Are you enjoying the rain?
At the moment, yeah, we've seen tornado activity over in Rogers County. Right now, mostly here, it's just been rain and hail, but things have moved out. You guys safe?
We're missing most of it, but we're watching some guys up in the north. So the reason I wanted to call is I wanted to get your perspective. My son is in the band program here in Fort Gibson. They're a great band program. Fort Gibson is the high school is affectionately known in the community as the Fort Gibson Christian Academy, if that gives you any idea of kind of what where we live. I know you're pretty familiar with the area, so you probably have a pretty good understanding of that.
I know that at the ball games here, even in Broken Arrow and elsewhere, which is a suburb of Tulsa, they pray before ball games. The teams come out and they have a team prayer and they do all these things. It's part of the norm. And, you know, those who raise a stink about it are vilified as you know, the killjoy, the buzzkill, the traitor. What's the challenge you're having specifically?
Oh, that's kind of what we were running into. So recently the kids all did really well in their band competitions. And so they had an opportunity to go to Branson kind of as a reward trip. They played there and whatnot. They raised a lot of, you know, did area fundraisers, and we all participated in raising money. Plus, it was actually a personal cost for each student to attend this trip. It was supposed to be a 3-day full trip, and they, you know, they had a big itinerary plan that, you know, basically involved a full Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. This was last week, and then just only like a day before they were supposed to leave, we all got an email that said that the Sunday was going to actually be cut short because a significant number of students had church events that night, and so the trip would be cut short, and they would all be back early afternoon so, you know, some of the students could do this church event. So I responded back to the email and, you know, kind of expressed my concern for why, you know, why this is an exception being made for certain students. And I actually replied to that email, and it went to all of the parents. And you can imagine how I'm certain that that went over in the community. However, I tried to keep it pretty generic, you know, not getting into a lot of details. I was contacted by the band director who said that it wasn't that it was a religious event. It was just that there was a significant number of students who would have another obligation. So I thought it was kind of an unfair thing to do, especially since, you know, all the students had fundraised and we had put money forth. So I actually had contacted the FFRS to get an intro legal opinion, and after reading through the emails, they seemed to feel like it would probably have no legal standing simply because the band director had said that she would have been willing to cut that trip short for any significant number of students. I don't believe that. However, the burden of proof would be on me. And so anyway, I wanted to get your thoughts on that and maybe some thoughts of your listeners, maybe the chat room could weigh in on that, because as you know, we do deal with a lot of issues that are fairly similar, and there's unfortunately a majority wins opinion when it comes to some of these issues, and that's clearly not the right way, but that's the message that gets communicated to the students. And then they kind of feel like that's how issues like this are supposed to go in a public school. So I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you what I think. I think I line up with FFRF on this one. If the trip itself was carting, busing kids into a church event, that's a clear violation. I think if a bunch of the kids independently have their own private religious service that they're going to go to, and those numbers are significant enough that they become problematic for the organizers. I mean, I don't begrudge them that. I understand it kind of sucks for those who aren't churchgoers. It cuts your event short a little bit, but I wouldn't sweat that one. I think I would be more interested about them introducing religious services, religious language, religious curriculum on school time at taxpayer expense. I think I would fight that battle. And the other one, I think I'd just let it roll. Let's wait until, the school itself really does overtly cross the line, and then we'll be able to go and have some real legal standing there. That's just my two cents. But we can see what the chat room has to say, so I encourage you to follow along and see what our listeners have to offer up, okay?
Yeah, I absolutely like these opinions. We actually have dealt with the school up to at least the principal level on issues with creationism being taught in my younger son's science classroom. Seventh grade science classroom. They seem to feel that was okay until we basically threatened to take it up even higher, and then at which point they stopped. So
welcome to Oklahoma, right? Like, we don't know the difference between school and Sunday school, and it's so frustrating sometimes. It just makes me crazy.
Basically, we had to write a multi-page letter to the principal with legal precedent and whatnot, and they stopped. To their credit, I suppose. However, it's any foot that you can get in the door, whether it's prayers before football games. Of course, they appear to be student led. At least that's what they'll say. However, there's an issue of ostracization from from kids who aren't willing to participate. It's issues that we deal with every day.
We'll keep our eyes and ears open here in Jesustown, and and we'll, try to keep everybody honest. So thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Say hi to the fam for me. Hope I get a chance to see you guys soon, okay?
Well, thanks for everything you do.
All right. Take care. Wow, the switchboard's jammed. I'll warn you, there's no way I'm going to be able to get to everybody. I'll do my best to get to several. 905, you're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. Who's this?
Teresa, I'm calling from Burlington, which is just outside of Toronto, and I can't wait to see you in June. Looking forward to it.
I will be there for Imagine No Religion 7. That's going to be an amazing event.
Absolutely. We're freaking looking forward to it. I happened to mention the conference to a friend of mine. We were out at happy hour at a bar, and I mentioned that we were going to a secular free-thinking conference, and he got this look on his face like, what the hell are you talking about? I said, well, a bunch of atheists, we're all getting together and, we're talking about science and, religion and, paleontology, all these other things. And he said, so what are you doing? You're going to be sitting in the basement and worshiping Satan? How do you respond to that kind of negative, like, response to that sort of thing? Like, you're like, no, we don't worship Satan. If there was a Satan, then no, I'm not worshiping God or Satan. But how do you personally respond to people who say that if you're an atheist, then you're worshiping Satan?
Well, I hear it more often than many would expect. I wouldn't expect it in Toronto. I mean, I expect it here in
You'd be surprised, Seth. You'd be surprised. We don't live in Tulsa, Oklahoma, but you'd be surprised how many Christian people. And, you know, I have to say that I grew up very much like you did. I was born into a very Christian family, and I was baptized when I was like 9 years old. I had no idea what the hell was happening to me. Other than I was going underwater and my nose was being held by some priest and I thought I was going to drown. But beyond that, you know, it was like, don't even say, oh my God, because we're going to hell. So
my response to the devil, quite frankly, people are, it's like the Hitler grenade that people like to throw out. It's an attempt to align non-believers in God with the worst. And so when they say so, you know, obviously for them, the idea of existing without a God, for many of them, is it's unthinkable. So if you don't accept God, you don't accept Yahweh or Jesus, well, there's only one other alternative in their mind, and that's the nemesis of God, which is the devil, right? You have to choose one. If you don't choose their Yahweh, then it must be the devil. And I always just stop and say, no, actually, I don't believe in the Bible. I don't believe in the biblical account of Yahweh or Jesus. I don't therefore believe in the Lucifer created by God. I don't believe in Satan. I don't believe in any deities anywhere. And, you know, usually that at least helps to give them a little bit of perspective. At some point, if they dwell over and over on the idea of how can you be an atheist, I like to use that one line from Dawkins. There are thousands of gods that you don't believe in. You just believe in one. But I just go one God.
Yours is the right one. Exactly.
Yeah. Do you believe in Zeus? Do you believe in Krishna? And they'll say, well, of course not. I'll be like, well, it's just like that. You're an atheist about Zeus. You're an atheist about Krishna. That's how I feel about Yahweh and Jesus. And, you know, sometimes you'll see a light bulb go off. They'll always preach at me, but at least it gives them some perspective. So
exactly. But the whole, you know, I have devil horns over my head and my face is red and I have a tail and a pitchfork. That's not what I'm about, but that's what people perceive when all of a sudden you say, no, I don't believe in God and I'm an atheist. It's like, oh my God, you're the devil. It's like,
well, no. How long did they know you personally before they ask or found out about your non-belief? Because if they get to know you and they know you're a beautiful person and you love to laugh and you've got purpose in your life and you're surrounded by goodness and all of those things, and they see you in three dimensions as a human being and then find out you're going to a secular conference, it's a whole lot harder to brand you as evil.
Well, that's what I tried to say. I tried to say, well, I'm the exact same person I was 5 days ago or 5 years ago. You've known me for 12 years. Why all of a sudden does this make me any different than I was 12 years ago?
Someone who has known you for 12 years thinks that you are evil now or associating with evil? They have changed the temperature of how they treat you after over a decade?
Yes.
Well, I think that says a whole lot more about them.
How do I respond to
it? Well, says more about them than it does about you. Yeah, exactly. Quite frankly, if agreement is a condition for love and acceptance, then they're not really friends. If the fact that you have a disagreeing position than they do,
we're more acquaintances now than we are friends. I'll tell you that.
All right. Fair enough.
The fact is that it's disheartening to know that people look at you differently when you change your point of view. Regardless of how they feel, they look at you differently and they think, oh my God, like, what are you, like, wearing dark cloaks in your basement with a pentagram in your basement with candles and shit, and you're like worshiping Satan. No, it's not.
Well, sometimes
any of that crap.
Sometimes you will find people, they'll say, actually say the words, "You're an atheist, but you're so nice." And this happens more often than many would realize, right? So what's happening under the skin in their own lives? They're having to reconcile the fact that you have real beauty and goodness and purpose in your life outside of the cookie cutter that they were taught that you have to live in, and you're messing with their categories.
Perfect.
And even if they're being awkward and bizarre, I would think under the surface, there's a real good chance that they're wrestling with some issues. They're trying to reconcile the fact that you don't fit into their cookie cutter. And, you know, some real good might come of it over the months and years ahead. I certainly hope so.
Oh, I agree. And I'm really looking forward. And I want a picture of you in Toronto in June, because we're going. And the only reason I'm going is to see you and Dawkins. So
I will be there and you won't have to look far. I'll be all over the place. I insist we do the photograph, and I'll see you in Toronto in a few weeks. Okay.
7 o'clock on Friday night. I'll be there.
Okay. All right. We'll see you that weekend.
Okay.
You take care. Thank you. It's imaginenoreligion.ca, by the way, if anybody wants to go. And yeah, Richard Dawkins is going to be there. Lawrence Krauss is speaking. There's a whole weekend worth of speakers. I'm doing a speech that I'm actually touring with now in these southern cities that I just mentioned earlier, called My Biggest Beef with Christianity for the Moment. And if you like the rant podcast where I just go off on a tangent, you're going to love this particular speech. It's kind of a crowd pleaser. It's fun to do, but I'd like to think there's also some truth in it. So imaginenoreligion.ca for that event in Toronto. Area code 404. You're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. Who's this?
Hey, Seth. This is Chris. How are you, man?
I'm well. What's going on in your world, Chris?
I run a podcast, so I have a bunch of different topics to talk about with you. What do you want to talk about? I got you.
Pick one. I got three other people behind you on the switchboard. I want to make sure I get to everybody if I can. What's on your mind? What's most prevalent on your plate?
To go back, a great, great redemption story is Robert Downey Jr. Robert Downey Jr. got busted. He came back in, what is that, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang movie, which was fantastic with Val Kilmer, one of his best movies ever. Came back after that, went to Iron Man, skyrocketed ever since.
He is brilliant in a David Fincher film called Zodiac. And he plays,
yes!
Who is the real life reporter that he played? It's on the tip of my tongue.
Nobody.
All right, everybody hold totally still. Like, it's right here. No one make a sound. Paul Avery. Thank you very much. He played the reporter named Paul Avery. He was right there on the tip of my... And Robert Downey Jr. is fantastic. And, you know, I don't know how true to life the film is in terms of finding the Zodiac killer, but David Fincher creates a film environment like a book. It's like a thick yarn, like a page turner. And Robert Downey Jr. remains my favorite part of the film. So, yeah, that's a great example. That's a great example.
Yeah, he's fan. Forget Mel Gibson's gone. He's gone. You can't. Once you deny the Holocaust, there's no coming back, right? I mean,
I'm a romantic. One day the cloud may dissipate and he may come to his senses and realize wrong. I was misguided. I know it's a long shot, but I'm going to hold out that hair's breadth of hope that even Mel Gibson can find his way back to the light. Anything else while I got you?
Yeah. Well, I got one topic that's really serious and one that's not. So you want the serious or not serious?
We can do them both if we do them quickly.
Okay. Yoga Hosers. What was your problem with Yoga Hosers? It was a good movie.
I never saw Yoga Hosers. You must be thinking of another host.
I thought you said you didn't like Yoga Hosers. Maybe you were talking about
never
The Wallace.
I know it's a Kevin Smith film that he shot. Didn't he produce it with his daughter?
Yeah.
I've never seen the film. So I must be confused with another Seth Andrews somewhere.
I don't know any other Seth Andrews, but give it a chance. Yeah. It's on Netflix. It's free. It's very hilarious. It's ridiculous. It's just fun. Just watch it. I know you're a movie guy. I just want to mention that. And
yeah, I mean, okay, I'm not a Kevin Smith guy in terms of Clerks and that didn't really. But Kevin Smith's Red State for me is a must watch for anybody who's fascinated by Westboro and religious fundamentalism. So,
absolutely, 100%. Do you think after all this time, do you think your podcast is still changing minds?
Well, I think that question is probably better answered by somebody else. You know, I want the show to not just change minds. I wanted it to be cathartic for those who have left the faith. I want it to be a resource for people who are curious about atheism. And if you'll notice, a lot of the shows that we do are about other religions. So we are learning about things like, you know, when we have Ron Miscavige from Scientology on, we're learning about Scientology. And when I'm doing the show in 2 weeks on the Old Testament depiction of Lucifer and how Christian churches may have gotten it wrong, we're all learning something about that. I hope it encourages people. I hope it helps to remind people that they're not alone. I have had a few people send me messages. I had one guy send me just hate mail. I hate mail, but he just destroyed me. You know, he was just like, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, you suck, you're wrong. And then 3 or 4 years later, I got a response and it said, so I sort of went around the corner in my own life and I realized that I'm an atheist and I wanted to apologize.
Wow.
So I don't know how much the show was a part of that. But, you know, if the show's not helping people, what am I good for? What's the whole show good for? So I desperately do want it to be relevant, you know?
My thought was always, you know, there's a certain level of, okay, so we have, you know, the top, you know, you're the top guy, and then there's other ones after you that go after you, Cogdis and all the rest of them, you know, atheists, speaking, all those that go after you. Is there a certain level that you're going to hit that's just going to be, now we're all just talking to everyone else?
Yeah, we're going to plateau.
Hey, point we're all going.
There is no producer who does this kind of work who doesn't wonder if and when there will come a day when you lose the ability to do what you do, or that people will just grow tired of you and disappear. Or if you will have covered everything that has to be covered and you have nothing left to say. You know, these are the nightmares of people who do this kind of thing. Now, I will say that I've been in that valley at times in my life and come out, and I have real hope that, you know, that's why this show isn't just about saying every week there is no evidence of any God anywhere, because who would want to listen to that? This show is about real life. This show is about relationships. This show is about the things that resonate with people, the things that we can relate to as those who've been given this brief moment in the sun on planet Earth. It's about science. It's about trying to figure out the world around us. And those things, those dynamic elements, they're going to be relevant every single day, and they're going to be a little bit more fresh and new every single day. So it is my hope that we'll remain relevant indefinitely. And if the time comes and everyone grows tired of it and grows tired of me, then I'll just, I'll be like Saul Goodman and Better Call Saul. I'll go work at the Dunkin' Donuts and, you know, just figure I had my time, you know, I guess I'm just going to go and do something else.
Time to go for
I hope it doesn't come. Honestly, this community is my family. I have a tremendous passion for what I do. I don't know how I could not do something like this. It's part of my DNA. So if there was a time when there were no listeners left and nothing left to talk about, I don't know what I'd do with myself. I can't even begin to consider it. So in the meantime, I'll give you what I got. You have that promise, okay?
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. As a fellow podcaster, always looking up to you. Thank you, sir.
I appreciate the kind words. Thank you so much. Take care.
Have a good night.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like when I've got 3 or 4 different book ideas on the table and I pull them up and look at them and the time is just not right. I am just not there at the moment when these things are, I'm just not ready. I'm not, the water's not being drawn from the well. And so I move on to other things that I am producing. And you wonder, you know, will there be a day when you schedule a radio show and there's a collective shrug from tens of thousands of people in the audience? I certainly hope not. But it, you know, what goes up very, very well may come down. So, you know, where's the future going to take me? I don't know. All I know is that in the time that I am here, I've made every pledge to be the best steward I can possibly be of the time and the investment and just the involvement of the people who've made this show what it is. I will never, ever, ever take you for granted. And that's all I got, you know, that's everything I got. 937, you're on the Thinking Atheist radio podcast. What's your name?
My name's Mike.
Mike, thanks for calling. Hello. What's going on, man?
Hey, just calling from Dayton, Ohio. I'm a longtime listener, first time caller. And
talk about what's on your mind.
Yeah, I just really was wanting to share some gratitude with you because you've, I mean, in my journey becoming an atheist, I'm a 54-year-old military guy, retired. And I was thinking of an idea while I'm saying this, that you did the show on addiction recovery, and I really enjoyed that. And then I was also thinking, like, with the military folks, how we get kind of indoctrinated when we're in there with a lot of assumptions that we're all Christian soldiers, so to speak. And I just, I don't know where that goes, but kind of nervous. But,
no, I get it. Great. I get it. We've covered atheists in the military and some of the challenges you face. And I totally understand.
Right. There's a guy that we're here in Dayton, and I retired from Wright Pat. So he's a colonel, and he's trying to get involved, and he's even thinking about maybe some podcasts or something along those lines. And we're trying to kind of sort our way through that. I don't know if it'll ever happen. Probably easier for me to do than him, because I'm totally disconnected from that area of my life, you know, with the military. He's still a contractor, so he has to deal with it on a daily. And it's pretty shocking, some of the emails he sends me with the colonels and the bosses and the supervisors, and the way they just, you know, I don't know how to explain it other than just how they like to indoctrinate and assume that we all think like they do. And
I know he's a controversial figure, but I've spoken with Mikey Weinstein up at the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, and he's tackling those types of things all the time. So what else on your mind, my friend? What's going on?
Oh, not much. Just like I said, just wanted to call in and thank you for when you wrote that book, Deconverted. That helped me a lot in my journey. I think I just mentioned about the addiction recovery thing. I'm in that situation as well. And it's kind of a scary place to be sometimes when I sit in there and hear all that 12-step God speak stuff. And but I'm getting better.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Well, thanks for the kind words. Deconverted for me was a labor of love. I always apologize for it. When people come and they pick up a copy, I'm always like, you know, the coloring section's on page 90, you know, and there's pop-ups. And I'm always joking about it, kind of deflecting. I always make sure and tell them it ain't Hitchens, right? Because I'm just now re-listening. I had read God Is Not Great by Christopher Hitchens, and I'm re-listening to it. I downloaded it on Audible. So I'm hearing Christopher Hitchens read his own work. And of course, you're hearing this amazingly well written and articulated point of view. And then I realized that, you know, I am at the kiddie table when it comes to this kind of stuff. But the fact that Deconverted would be an encouragement to you at an important time is huge for me. It's huge for me. And so thanks for supporting it. Thanks for the kind words. And,
you know, that's where I kind of started. I started with the Hitchens and the Dawkins. And but there was something about your book. And I think maybe because, I don't know, it could be just pure coincidence. Uncle Sam decided in his great wisdom to send me to Oklahoma twice. I'm from Ohio. On my dream sheet, Ohio all the time. It starts with an O. Let's send him to Altus. Let's send him to Tinker. So I spent a majority of my career there, and I totally understand the Tulsa thing. I have a few friends from there, and it's amazing. I don't know how you guys do it out there. It's a different world for me.
It's awesome to be an atheist in Tulsa, and it's maddening to be an atheist in Tulsa. But I'd rather be a free thinker here, where people, you know, where it makes a difference. So we'll just keep kicking, man. Will you take care of yourself? All my best in your recovery, and you take care. All right.
That sounds great. Thank you. You too.
You bet. Let's do two more very quickly. I've got 913. You're on the Thinking Atheist radio podcast. Who's this?
Hi, Seth. My name's Justin. Nice to talk to you.
Hey, thanks for calling Switchboard. What's going on, Justin?
Well, actually, I've been listening to you for a long time. You actually read one of my letters during your podcast about raising children without religion back some time ago. So I just wanted to say thank you first off, because I started listening to you when I was kind of going through that transition from deism to agnosticism to which basically atheism right after that. And I just really appreciate the work that you do and everything that you've done over the years. It's just, I think for me to answer what one of the other callers about what you do is not really opening the road for people, but at least allowing some comfort for people who are very religious and leave and knowing that it's okay. Because that was the hardest thing for me, because I grew up very religious. I was Roman Catholic and lived that life through my mid to late 20s until finally starting to read the Bible more than what was told to me.
Well, that's all I need, man. I mean, I can go 6 months on that compliment. Thank you for saying it. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. And it means a lot. And, you know, it's funny because I remember thinking about that letter I wrote about my kids and raising them without religion. And I've got somewhat of, I guess, a unique story with that, because I grew up, I'm Kansas City, and I've lived in Chicago and New York for a short bit, but religion's very big in the Midwest. You know that better than anyone. Right now it's very almost kind of surreal for me because of where I'm at with my kids. They're 7 and 4, and I've got a boy who's in Cub Scouts, and now I'm the committee chair for the Cub Scout pack that my son's in. And what's crazy about this is the committee members know that I'm an atheist, but they don't care, which is just amazing, considering what most of the Boy Scouts has been like. But I've never really had a problem with it, because it's there's so much that they learn from it outside of anything religious, just like life skills and beyond that, and just learning to be respectful to others around them, which is pretty cool. But it's pretty interesting that I got kind of into this, even though people know I didn't believe, they knew I was a good person and was good at what I do. So it was pretty interesting to see how this road's almost improved as I've left religion, and you know, things have become even better. And I think people like you and Dawkins and Hitchens and many other people that I've read. I mean, I remember the first thing that made me kind of flip a switch was watching, I was very religious at the time, but I watched a debate with, I think it was Hitchens, and I can remember the other British actor versus the Catholic Church. I was like, holy shit.
Oh yeah. Stephen Fry. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And oh yeah.
That was the first flip switch.
Everyone drop what you're doing in YouTube, Intelligence Squared Debate, Christopher Hitchens, Stephen Fry. It's 2 hours it's some of the most well-articulated indictments of the Catholic Church and religion in general I have ever heard. It's fantastic. So, yeah.
Yeah. And growing up a Roman Catholic and really being into it, it was very eye-opening. So yeah, for those people that haven't watched it, I mean, it's a pretty impressive debate, but not only because of how articulate they are, but just the way that they change the minds of the audience in the theater. And I think that was the biggest thing for me, was that shift in the viewpoint of the people that were there. I mean, that was probably one of the best, well done debates, and especially when it comes to perception of reality. So it was pretty cool, but I do need to thank you a lot, and I really appreciate it. It's kind of funny, as I still raise my kids and I'll still do things like the Easter Bunny and tried to hide the teeth, and just the last week my son found one of the teeth that I had hid after putting the money under the pillow, and he goes, Dad, I gotta talk to you. I'm like, okay, well, what happened? And he goes, I found a tooth that was under my pillow last night. I'm like, okay, well, what does that mean? He goes, I'm pretty sure that you put the money under my pillow. I go, okay, well, what does that mean? He goes, I'm pretty sure the tooth fairy is not real, but as long as you keep putting money under my pillow, I'll keep doing it.
He totally gets it, right? He totally gets it. Hey, I was like, all right, keep the tradition up, Dad. As long as we know it's all fake anyway, let's just have some fun with it. I love this kid.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you're making a difference awesome. Where you are in the Cub Scouts, and you know, people are seeing somebody who is just a secular person who they enjoy and they trust. That's huge. It's bigger than probably you realize. So just keep being yourself and, you know, being a dad to your kids and a Cub Scout leader, whatever you call yourself, and let us know how that goes, okay?
Awesome. Thank you very much, Seth. You're an awesome guy.
I appreciate you so much. Take care.
All right.
I've got time here for one more. I just talked right over him. I'm so sorry about that. I've got a little bit of a delay on the switchboard. 410, you're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. Who's this?
Hi, this is Justin.
Hey, good to talk to you. What's going on in your world? What do you want to talk about?
I had a quick question for you, and then I wanted to, and then just a quick little statement about something going on in my neck of the woods that, little bit of religious people having their way. But my quick question was, for someone like you, I wanted to ask this to Matt Dillahunty as well. If I ever get to meet him, I'm going to ask him the same thing. If you guys ever come to the Northeast, that's my my little plug there. I know someone earlier was saying come to Alabama, so come to the Northeast, come back to the East Coast. But what advice would you give to someone who kind of wants to do what someone like you or Matt Dillahunty is doing, but doesn't have, like, I feel like you guys, like Matt had years and years worth of followers from the Atheist Experience. So then, you know, once he started his YouTube channel and his Patreon, he already had that built-in support over years and years. And so it's also with you, you've just kind of grown your channel over time. So what do you think, in your opinion, with all the technology today and with YouTube and Patreon and all the different avenues that you could start some sort of channel like that, if you had to start over again from scratch today and you didn't have anybody, any followers, and nobody knew who you were, where would you start? Where would you go?
Well, I know I cheated a little bit because you're talking to somebody who had 14 years in FM radio, and I did a lot of production and storytelling as a broadcaster long before I ever knew what a radio podcast was. And I started at a time when the free thought movement had a real storytelling problem. So it was sort of fortuitous that I ended up starting when I did. But I always encourage people who want to make a difference to play to their gifts, to make a difference starting where you are. There's a myth that if you don't have 100,000 listeners on your show, that you don't matter or that you can't matter. And I'm like, well, you know, your gift might be to be a communicator on a radio show. There may be a podcast angle that isn't being covered out there. And if there's a vacuum, let's fill it. It may be that your gifts lie in a place that isn't radio. You know, are you a musician? Are you an artist? Are you a writer, storyteller? Is there something that you do very well and that you're passionate about? That's where I always encourage people to start. Find out what you're good at and what you're most passionate about and do that. And if you're that good at it, and if you can really hone it and develop your temperature and style and tempo of what that is, people will eventually sort of gravitate to that. And you can use that as a foundation to build a larger community or a larger organization, a larger show, a larger platform for you to be able to do what you do, whether it's writing or art or otherwise. You know, the cliche is start where you are, but that's the advice I give people. You know, start where you are, start small, use the small times to sort of work out the kinks, find out what you're good at, and just give it everything you've got. There are no guarantees in this world, but it's my hope that you'll be able to find a way to sustain whatever you're passionate about and go out there and be a big part of the conversation. Okay.
All right. Great advice. Spoken like someone who truly is good at what they do, which is speaking.
Well, you're very kind. Well, I mean, I feel like I'm cheating a little bit because I'm not giving you a lot of specifics, but the truth is that everybody is so different. Everyone is working with a different set of tools and their background is different. They can speak to different things. They have different interests and passions. Only you can really define what those things are. But I think once you do, then at least you realize, well, I'm good at this and I care about this and I'm passionate about that. I think that's a great starting point. And then if you can go out and stir that pot long enough and hard enough, good things may happen. I hope that's the case for you. Okay.
And then really quickly, I just wanted to, another small thing was a lot of times we see a lot of stories today and about religion versus government, and it's a lot of like big time stuff. But a lot of people, I think, sometimes forget that you can make a lot of difference in local stuff. For example, this was something that recently happened in my hometown, was that we had a local library that was trying to put on a sex ed class for teenagers so that they could go. It was a class where they could go and speak to a sex ed educator and ask them all the questions that they didn't want to ask their parents. Well, religious people, I live in Southern Maryland, and it's just south enough that it's pretty conservative enough that people got all up in arms, and the library ended up canceling the program because all these people came out and said, "Oh, I don't need you telling my kids about sex. They need to, you know, not have sex until they're, you know, 30 or whatever, you know."
Yeah, good luck with that. Good luck with arguments. That.
Exactly. So, anyway, it was just it's interesting to see. It's always easy to go on Facebook and look at stories that are happening in other parts of the world and are on a national scale, and then forget that you can make a difference here in the local area. So, our local we have a Southern Maryland. It's called Southern Maryland Secular Humanist Organization. They decided to host the event themselves. So they made a GoFundMe page. They got some money to cover for the speaker, and they're going to be having it, putting it on themselves, so that they're still using the library as the meeting space, but the library is no longer putting on the organization, like putting on the event themselves. So they're still going to be able.
Some good science-based sex ed when I was growing up, you know. I mean, we never had the talk. Thank goodness for basic cable, you know. I'm just saying. Oh, my friend. All right, well, I got to call it a night. Thanks for calling the show and for the kind words, and all my best in your endeavors out there, okay?
All right, thanks, Seth.
All right, take care. Yeah, we had a joke. I think it was at the Free OK 3 or 4 years ago. We were talking about how adolescent boys in the church would spend time just gazing at scrambled late night cable television. You know, if it wasn't for that, I didn't even want to think about it. I didn't want to think about it. That's the broadcast, a completely impromptu yet hopefully entertaining for you show, and a lot of great callers. Thanks for being a part of that. I will see you back here on the radio next time as we do a 2-part series about free speech. It's titled When to Punch a Nazi. I am preparing myself as we speak for the hate mail, but it's going to be a compelling and entertaining conversation in 2 parts next week. I'll see you then.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on The Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.